Welcome to Software Gone Wild from sunny Zurich, Switzerland. Last time I've been here, I've been speaking with Lauren Van Bever, currently working at Technical University of Zurich. And we wanted to talk about fibbing and never got there because he is involved in too many other interesting projects like SDN-based Internet Exchange Points. Today, let's fix that omission. Welcome back, Laurent.
Welcome. Thank you.
We will not go into your history again because that will bring us to who knows where else.
Yes, let's avoid this.
Yeah, so people who want to know more about you should listen to this other podcast.
Yeah.
Where we left you stranded at Princeton.
Yes.
Working on SDN.
Correct.
So what happened after that?
Well, it's a very good introduction to this podcast. So when I was at Princeton, we started to have a crazy idea, which is how can we do SDN on top of existing network? And what I mean by doing SDN is really how can I program my routers? So I don't want to configure the routers anymore. I don't want to know 10 different flavors of iOS or Junos. I just want to use the same paradigm as an SDN controller, which is I want an API that enables me to program forwarding state in my routers. And so we started with this question, and what we end up with and realizing is that actually routing protocols are a pretty good API to program forwarding state in the router. And the good thing about routing protocols is that whether it is Cisco, Alcatel, Juniper, Brokit, Force10, you name it, they all speak the same OSPF. They have to. Even though the implementation might be very different, on the wire, they all have to speak the same protocol. And the behavior of the protocols are kind of well known. So if you think about like a protocol like OSPF, I know exactly what the router is doing. So the routers are exchanging by flooding a topology, a weighted graph, and then on the weighted graph, they run a shortest path algorithm, in this case, Dijkstra. So you can think of this as routers being functions. So I know the function that the router is doing. So it's like Dijkstra on the graph. And I know the output that I would like, for instance. I would like my routers to forward on the right. And so what we were starting to think about is how can we figure out the input that we need to show to the routers in order for them to compute the output that we wanted. And that's basically the genesis of the fibbing project in this case.
Okay, so let's step back.
Yeah.
You have a running OSPF network.
Yeah.
And you don't like how it works.
Yeah.
And you want to change the way it does the forwarding.
Yeah.
And one way to do that would be to play with the OSPF costs.
Correct, yes.
Which we mentioned in our previous podcast can lead to interesting challenges.
Yep.
If you have like half a million too much in your budget, you go and you buy Karen and Matty, mm-hmm. and they do that stuff for you, mm-hmm. assuming you don't have that money. So you want to change the forwarding state in the network, but you don't want to configure policy-based routing, or you don't want to configure route maps.
I don't want to configure anything.
Yeah. So the only thing left is the routing protocol.
Yeah.
And there are people doing this with BGP Flow Spec.
Yeah.
And Peter Lapuco was writing about doing this with BGP when he was still at Microsoft.
Yep.
And now he's gone over to the other dark side and he's gagged, so he can't talk about what he's doing.
Yeah.
But I would guess that those ideas are not completely forgotten.
Yeah.
And you guys start focused on OSPF.
Correct.
Or, well, let's say focused on link state protocols.
Yeah.
Why?
Yeah, so there are essentially three reasons we were looking at link state as SDN interface. And the first one really is that link state protocols are actually pretty easy and simple to understand. So as I mentioned,
Greg Farrell would disagree with you, but let's leave it at that.
Yes. Okay. You can make them very complex. It's true. But I would argue that for like a lot of the configuration out there in the wild are actually kind of easy. Obviously, you can be AT&T and run a crazy 10 different areas with not so stubby and virtual links, whatever. But if you think about like a vanilla OSPF area zero configuration, it's really easy to understand. So I have a graph and I just compute shortest path on the graph.
So we are talking about single area networks of a reasonable size.
Correct. Even though we do support also networks with multiple areas, mm-hmm. if that's the question. But yes, I'm just considering a simple case just to make it clear what's going on here. Mm-hmm. And so if you think about now what, so it's very easy to know what the NoSPF router will do when you show him something. So if you mm-hmm. change the topology in some way, it's very easy to figure out what will be the impact on the router. So now consider what happens when you have BGP. So every router can have policies, okay? Can have policies on a per session basis. So in order to figure out what the router will do, you will have to look at the router configuration, look at the policies of the router. If there are local pref or whatever that are like installed, you will have to take this into consideration in order to figure out whether, for instance, the router will even pick your route as best and push it in the field.
Okay. Now you oversimplified your case.
And I complexified the other one.
Yes.
But okay. So that's I guess it would be fair. That's not the only reason why we don't look at BGP, but I would still argue that the BGP behavior is actually more complex. Also, for instance, a more simple case, right? IBGP routers will not reflect a route that they learn on an IBGP session, right?
Unless you're running the right release on Cisco iOS, yada, 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 yada.
Okay, but you are exactly doing what I wanted.
No. Agreed like, with you.
Right? So OSPF is the same everywhere, right? So, of course, you can have some features of like Cisco that enable you to reflect on IBGP sessions, but I don't think they will be available across the board.
Sorry, I misunderstood you. I thought you were talking about changing next hops on IBGP sessions. Now, of course, you would reflect. You would always reflect. If you configure the other guy to be route reflector client.
Of course. But then I have to configure all the routers in my network to be route reflectors.
Yes.
And you don't want to do that, right? For like many reasons you don't want to do this.
So okay, this is the stuff for another podcast.
This is again for another podcast, but basically I think just like intuitively, OSPF is, you don't have those policies. So, and you don't have those constraints, it's flooding. It's not, the propagation is not tied by the way the protocol is configured and by the way the protocol behaves. It's pure flooding and it's Dijkstra on the graph. So this was very appealing for us.
So Peter solved that by having a direct session between the controller and every router.
That's true. That's fair. So I'm not saying... So, okay, don't get me
you're
wrong.
Not saying it cannot be done.
Exactly.
I agree.
Yes. Yeah. So I'm not saying it cannot be done. What we're looking at is something also that is available across the board, right? Mm-hmm. So if you think of an enterprise network, for instance, like the ETH network, there is no BGP. Well, there is actually two BGP sessions, one to provider one to provider two.
Shame on you guys.
And then there is like a 0/0, which is redistributed in the network. So if you go for BGP, then obviously AT&T will take it. Probably the data center guys will take it as well, because this is what they are doing.
But not all the enterprise data center guys.
But there are many cases where this would not be just even supported.
Yeah.
I think, and you are a good one. No, this is one question for you. Can you think of a Cisco box, for instance, that does not support OSPF, for instance?
There was this one switch where you had to pay extra license to get OSPF and you would get EHRP in the baseline code.
Okay. So you get my point, right? So at ETH, all the equipment support OSPF, but we don't have BGP, for instance. And so we were finding this really appealing to use.
The important point that I was getting to before we got sidetracked was that, you're right. In OSPF, you do flooding before you do route selection.
Correct.
And in BGP, you do policy first, route selection next, and flooding third.
Everything is entangled in BGP.
Yeah.
And you know, so what we are doing is really, heavily tied to the ability to figure out what how a router will react upon a given message.
Yeah.
If we cannot do that easily, then it's very hard to do fibbing at all. So Peter Lapukov and these other guys in data centers, they configured the BGP network in such a way that they can do this.
Yeah, and they configured it just right.
Just right. Yeah. So in that case, you can obviously use BGP for this. But for all the other cases, I would say just use OSPF, and then your life will be much more easier.
So you're using OSPF like a NoSQL database with eventual consistent replication.
Correct. That's and that makes our life so much easier because we are really leveraging 25 years of Cisco engineering and Juniper engineering. So a link state protocol on the router is like very efficient. So those guys have really done a very good job in optimizing the flooding code how long a router takes to compute like a shortest pass. And so that makes our life very easy because we can just leverage all those features directly. So if you look at the code of our controller, it's extremely tiny compared to the code of Open Daylight, for instance, which is
That's a kitchen sink. Let's not go there.
Yes, no, let's not go there. But I just want to stress that because we can leverage distributed protocol implementation and computation, our code is really, really tiny. It's really easy.
You're focusing on a single problem.
We are focusing on a single problem, correct?
They focused on boiling the ocean, so they had to invent the abstraction layer first and implement Yank in the abstraction layer so that the infrastructure for boiling the ocean would be there.
Correct, correct. And also, to be fair, what we are doing with this project is to provide an SDN API to the network.
Yeah.
And then on top of the SDN API, you can obviously start to boil the ocean if you would like it, right? So this is something also to distinguish is that we provide an access, programmable access to your Cisco devices or Juniper devices. What you do with that access, it's up to you, obviously.
So you are like open, you could be eventually like OpenFlow plugin for Open Daylight, but you would be OSPF plugin.
Exactly,
for
yes.
So Open Daylight.
The idea, I mean, one of the objective and hope of this project is that we could actually be the SDN API that people would go for when they have to implement something in a layer 3 network and they would go for fibbing. If you have OpenFlow devices, you can just use OpenFlow. And as you mentioned, if you have like multiple hybrid devices in your network, you would just use this Osborne interface that makes sense.
No, but with OpenFlow, you're yet again to that same problem we've been discussing before. You have to have a connection to every device.
Correct, correct.
And because it's dangerous to configure flow rules on the same interface where the control connection
That's true.
You would need a separate control plane, which is extra complexity.
Yes, so in terms of complexity and like efficiency, obviously not all SaaS-bound APIs are created equal. And the nice thing here with fibbing is that what we centralize is the provisioning of the pass, right? So you can tell me you want your routers to forward like this, and you just have to tell me this once. And this is the only part which is centralized. You just tell me, I want this forwarding pass. And then we'll automatically create the input, inject that in the network, and then the routers will actually compute the pass for us.
So you would use this to configure sort of like explicit traffic engineered paths.
Yes, you could think of what you can do with the explicit route object in RSVPT. You can do it with fibbing, easy, actually.
Okay, but with fibbing, you are limited to the semantics of OSPF or link state protocols.
Correct. So that's a very good point. So this is something for which fibbing is probably less powerful than OpenFlow. Is the fact that we are using an IP routing protocol. So obviously, we are destination-based.
Yeah, so you can change the forwarding path for a certain prefix.
Correct.
You can't obviously do this on port or whatever.
No, we cannot do that. So we get that question a lot. And our answer now is that if you want to do that, you probably don't need to do port-based matching on all the devices in the network. So you could have, for instance, some devices that can do it. And then you would use fibbing to bring the traffic to those devices and maybe use FlowSpec, as we discussed in the previous podcast. you could use FlowSpec in some nice location in your network to actually start matching on the like ports, for instance. The cool thing is that it's still centrally provisioned. You don't configure anything. You use BGP to push this route map matching on port 80. And then you use fibbing and OSPF to just bring the traffic to the router, which can do FlowSpec. So that's the answer. Something else I want to mention is that, and that's actually also a reason why we went for OSPF, is the support for multipass routing and ECMP. So mm-hmm. that's something which is quite nice, is that by default, an OSPF router, when it has multiple equal cost paths to a destination, will start load balancing. And with fibbing, we can increase the amount of load balancing in the network by creating paths with the same cost as the initial one, for instance.
So because no vendor would want to implement unequal cost ECMP,
yes,
which can be done in OSPF if the other path is an Aleph, loop-free alternate path.
Yes.
And because no one did that, you said, well, now with fibbing, we can actually
correct
do
so
that.
We can do it. So we can implement unequal cost load, unequal load balancing, unequal cost load balancing on the per destination basis. We can even go to the /32 actually. Mm-hmm. If you really want to create like 10 different paths for like a single destination, we can do it. With BGP, obviously there are many tricks to enable like ECMP on BGP, but that's again something which is harder because BGP is by design a one pass protocol.
Yeah.
And so this is also one of the reasons why also we went for OSPF, to backtrack a bit to the previous question. But that's something I wanted to mention, is that multipass support is really useful for us. And that's something that, again, might be compared to OpenFlow. You would have to, I'm actually not even sure you would do it with OpenFlow switches, those unequal cost load balancing.
Oh, you can.
You can probably by playing with the forwarding rules.
Yeah, you play with the forwarding rules, and then you have the whichever output group.
Yes, correct. Yes.
Yeah, which is effectively the next hop group.
Yeah. So from that point of view, it would be similar then. Yeah. But with BGP, would have been harder.
Oh, agreed.
Yeah.
So you sort of tried to make OSPF look like EHRP.
No, probably not. Why are you saying this?
Because EHRP has an equal cost multipath.
Yes. EHRP has many things that no one knows, right?
Yeah.
So if you look at all the parameters in EHRP that are set to zero by most of the people,
they're set to zero for a good reason.
Exactly. Yes.
Yeah.
And that's, so we are not trying to, well, I think you may have a point that what we are trying to do is to make OSPF more flexible.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the problems of OSPF by default is like shortest path destination based routing. And so with fibbing, we can basically steer traffic a la MPLS, on any path that you want, using again vanilla OSPF. So by creating those lies and injecting them in the network, we can trick the router in computing any path mm-hmm. that you want, as long as there is no loop. Because again, we are using OSPF, so we cannot create a loop. So if you really want a loop somewhere in the network, which we think is not frequent, even though it can happen for NFV reasons, mm-hmm. for instance, then again, you will have to use another technology in hand with fibbing.
Oh, you just gave me some crazy ideas mentioning NFV, so let's not go there.
Okay.
Right. By now, probably everyone in the audience disagrees with you because they know how inflexible OSPF is.
Well, they should agree with me then, because I'm giving them a way to improve flexibility.
Yeah. And everyone by now should be asking himself the question, what is going on? What are these guys doing?
Yes.
How do you get this thing done?
Yes, yes.
So I
can probably start with a high-level example just to give the intuition, right? Mm-hmm. But so just think of I'm running my network and suddenly there is a traffic surge somewhere. And I suspect I'm the network operator and I suspect that there is a DDoS going on. But I'm not sure. It might be just like there is suddenly very popular content that I host in my network. And so I would like to take a look. I would like just to steer the traffic to some location where I'm maybe running a middle box, just to be sure that it's indeed legit and not an attack. So as we mentioned before, you can start playing with the SPF weights. You can start creating tunnels using maybe MPLS to bring the traffic where you want. But all of these are like pretty configuration intensive.
Mm-hmm.
So with fibbing, what we would do is basically we would create a fake router in a sense that would be connected to the location you want the traffic to go. And we'll basically advertise from that fake router the destination you want the traffic to be attracted. And that fake router will advertise that destination with a tiny cost. So that now if you look, so we inject that in the network.
Okay.
Flooding.
So let's say the cost from source to destination is 100.
Okay.
And your location where you want to do the inspection to keep things simple,
yes,
is 50.
Yeah.
So you're saying now I will create a fake router attached to that intermediate point. I will announce the destination with cost 1.
For instance, yes.
So it will be 51 to get to the intermediate point where we want to see the traffic. It would be 100 to go to the end point.
Yeah.
So yeah, we've diverted the traffic.
Correct. So that's the intuition.
Yes. But how do you get that? Well, I know you can send any LSAs into an OSPF network and no one will ever complain.
Yeah.
But there are these rules in OSPF that if you want to add a new router,
yeah,
then an existing router has to admit that the
correct
new router is a neighbor, or you will not have two-way
correct
path, and SPF will not do anything.
Correct. So that's a very good point. And you really pointed the core implementation issue, mm-hmm, that we had with OSPF was this.
So yeah, that was the part I couldn't figure out. So yeah,
correct.
Of course I'm interested.
So the description I just gave is that you create a fake router. So that's just to give the intuition to the audience how it works. In practice, as you mentioned, you cannot create a fake router because OSPF, the notion of adjacencies is tied to first bidirectional adjacencies. So you need both ends to agree that there is an adjacencies. And also you have this problem that adjacencies are tied to the physical interface in OSPF. So even though fibbing would support creating fake router and it has like a lot of advantage in doing so, That would be easy. We cannot do it. So what we did use in the end is that we used, we use type 5 LSAs to do that. And so type 5 LSAs are like those LSAs that could be advertised to, propagate external destination in,
yes,
the network. And the cool thing with type 5 LSAs, well, actually there are two nice things that helped us implement fibbing with them, is that the first one, there is, you can specify the destination, can be anything.
Yeah, you can have third part. Well, yeah,
yes,
the destination prefix.
Yes.
Yeah.
You can set the cost, the destination that you advertise.
Yeah.
And then you can also set a third party next step. You just,
yes,
mentioned it, which is called the forwarding address in OSPF. Mm-hmm. And that's actually all we needed to make fibbing a reality in this case. So what we would do, so to come back to the previous example, instead of creating a router and connect it to the location we want to attract the traffic to, we'd actually inject in the network, we would inject type 5 LSAs with forwarding address that direct traffic towards this location and with a cost which is less than 100 in this case. So the nice thing here is that we can play with the cost. So if we set a higher cost, we will attract less people. If we set a tiny cost like 1, we'll attract a lot of people. So depending on the requirement of the operator, we can actually tweak that cost and attract more or less people.
So when you advertise type 5 LSA with a third party next hop,
yep,
is the cost toward the third party next hop from,
yep,
this prefix?
Yeah.
Okay, so I'm sitting at the edge of the network.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm using the loopback address of some guy,
yep,
as the third party next hop.
Yep.
And then everyone will think that the cost for the destination is the cost toward that loopback plus whatever cost I announce.
Correct. So that's a very good point. So you have to distinguish the absolute versus relative way of interpreting that cost.
Mm-hmm.
So if you are relative, it means that if I set the forwarding address to even,
mm-hmm,
and I'm another router, and I've set the weight to 10, I will first look, what is my cost to reach even the loopback address in your example? And then I will add 10 to it.
Mm-hmm.
Or I can set it in absolute mode and then say 10 is the new cost. And then I don't even look at the cost to reach you in this case.
This would be E1 versus E2?
Yeah, I think so, yes.
Yeah.
You know this better than me, but I think
E1, you add internal and external. E2.
Yes.
You'd use external, and internal is just a tiebreaker.
Correct.
Yeah.
So you raise a nice point here, is that because of this behavior of routers adding their weight to the cost that we advertise, there are some paths actually that we cannot implement directly out of the box. But we have actually a trick again. So I mentioned already a bunch of tricks, and here...
Okay, but before going there...
Yes.
So if you want to pull traffic to destination X...
Yeah.
You can just insert an E2 route mm-hmm. with low cost.
Yeah.
And saying here's the next hop.
Yeah.
And because it's an E2 route, everyone will just send the traffic there.
Correct. But sometimes you don't want everyone to go there. You only want
we're getting there.
Yes.
There's this other problem that there is already an internal route for that same destination prefix.
Yeah.
Which you cannot overwrite with the E2 route.
No, you're right. We have one condition in fibbing, is that the original cost to reach the destination should be high enough that we can actually attract the traffic by mm-hmm. injecting a destination with a lower cost. So you might wonder, how do you do that? And the answer is pretty easy, actually. For instance, so the minimum cost should be 2. So if the cost to reach a destination is 2 or more, then you can use fibbing, because I can always add 1. I can inject the destination.
The destination must be an external route.
With fibbing, yes. Yes. Even though the original destination doesn't have to be, but we inject an external route for attracting the traffic with it.
No, but if the original destination is not external, you can never overwrite it with an external route. Internal always takes precedence over external.
Okay, that's a fair point. Then I guess you're right.
So you have to redistribute all the edge subnets
yes.
into OSPF or ISIS
yes.
so that they appear as external routes.
Or I guess you can maybe change the default AD for the E1, E2, and internal. Maybe that would do the trick to avoid this.
Oh, yeah, you could play with that. No, it won't.
Okay.
Because the route selection is done before the routes are copied into the main routing table.
Okay.
And the AD is only added when you copy the route to the main routing table.
Okay. Yeah, so you're right. So that's something I actually had never really thought of, to be honest. But you may be right. I will have to.
Yeah, it has to be. Well, there's this other trick that some other people are doing. Mm-hmm. Instead of one destination prefix, you announce 2 more specifics.
Yeah, you can also... Yeah, you're right.
And then you're done.
Yes, yes.
Apart from host routes.
Yes. But, yeah.
Okay, now for the more interesting part. You want some people to send traffic to you, but not all.
Yes. So we have this trick that we have 2 types of lies. We have 2 types of type 5 LSAs, if you want to think about it. You have the one for which the forwarding address is resolvable by all the routers in the mm-hmm. in the network. So the forwarding address is actually injected in the IGP itself. So it's a loopback and everybody can reach a loopback. Mm-hmm. And then we have another type of forwarding address, which is such that only one guy can resolve it. And so we create, if you want, a forwarding address for every router in the network. And this we have to statically configure.
For every next hop.
Not for every next. For every next step, yes. And then, but that's true. But you have to do it once and then you're mm-hmm. done.
So on every router in your network, you need a static host route pointing for each of the outgoing interfaces.
Yes, yes.
That you want to include in fibbing.
Let's correct. This yes, you don't have to do that for the interface if you don't plan on using them for fibbing. Yes.
And your controller has to know about that. So I guess you're using SNMP to pull down the routing table.
No, well, in this case, I'm doing even something simpler. You do this configuration once. And then you just you're right. So there is like
no, but I understand.
Yeah, of course, right. So the first day you have to reconfigure something, and you do this. You also make sure that the original weights are such that we can actually attract traffic with fibbing. And then you're done. You don't ever have to touch your mm-hmm. SPF configuration again.
Unless, of course, you add interfaces to the Fibbing domain.
Of course. Well, if you provision a new router, then I cannot go around this. I cannot provision a Cisco configuration using OSPF yet.
Yeah.
It would be nice, but I cannot do it. So this I don't remove, obviously. Mm-hmm. But like the traffic engineering part and basically the routing part can be now offloaded to the Fibbing controller. Yes.
So you need one fake static route per interface, per router.
Well, yes. But the thing, though, is that those enable locally visible LAN. Because now if I put a forwarding address to be one of these, mm-hmm. I know that only you can see it and only you will be tricked.
Yeah, and everyone goes like, oh, this next hop is unreachable. I can't use this LSA. Forget it.
Exactly, yeah. Yes. So now we have these two things, right? We have the globally visible lines that everybody sees with a forwarding address which is resolvable by everybody. Then we have the locally visible lines that we know are only resolvable by some people, mm-hmm. by some router.
By one router.
By one router, yeah. Correct. Thank you for this, yes. And so our controller now will automatically compute. So in some cases, we need locally visible lines. We'll use locally visible lines. But what we try to do is to maximize the amount of globally visible lines that we can use. So we would first go for like injecting globally visible lines and attracting many people with them, but not too many. And then for the people that we cannot attract, because we would attract too many, then we start playing with locally visible lines. And by combining the two, we can always implement any pass. Because to give you the proof, you could just do everything with locally visible lines, and then it's like static routing with OSPF. But obviously, we don't want this. We want like dynamic routing.
So to use our previous example,
yep.
we said cost from source to destination is 100, and I want to intercept the traffic, and we said the cost to the interception point is 50 to make our life easier.
Yeah.
But now with what you just explained, you actually don't even have to do that. The interception point could be anywhere because you would use E2 external paths.
Yes.
And you would just take over.
Yes, correct.
So the traffic is pooled to the interception point, but there you have to get it to the original destination.
Correct, yes. So the way you would do it is that you would start crafting the path from the location towards the the real destination.
So you have like loose source routing to the interception point.
Yes.
And then you need strict source routing to get to the...
It's not source exit. Routing in the sense that it's still destination based. And
equivalent to.
Yes. So, but I don't want the audience to believe that we need like thousands and thousands of lies to do what we're describing. Mm-hmm. Actually, you can usually... And we realize this, the amount of lies that we need to attract routers and implement the forwarding path is actually quite tiny. So the cool thing is that if you are the forwarding address and I'm forwarding to you, you will not care about the lie mm-hmm. because you are the forwarding address. So you will not even mm-hmm. look at this. So in your previous example, you were mentioning, oh, okay, I will attract traffic to the intersection point. But if the interception point is the forwarding address, the interception point will not care about it. And so we can use another lie with the forwarding address that now brings the traffic towards the actual destination in order to bring the traffic from the interception point back to the actual destination. So this is the trick that we use in this case.
But the interception point has to be close enough to the actual forwarding path.
Yeah, well, don't forget that interception point is like... It's a thing we invent, right? It's a...
No, but if it's close to the actual forwarding path...
Yes.
Then you have like this a hill, and the question is to which point, to which way the ball will roll down.
Yes, but so as I mentioned, we can always attract, we can always create any path, and this is actually very easy to picture by just adding one lie per next stop. So mm-hmm. we can think of I'm creating like tiny triangles everywhere when I'm bringing traffic from one link, putting it on another link. Bringing traffic from one link, putting it in another link, and I'm doing this step by step on mm-hmm. the path. So I can always do that. And the only condition is that if the cost to reach the destination is actually bigger than one, then I can add a lie with one, and then you will be fit, as we say, right? So the trick, though, is that if you do it naively, you will create many of these lies, because you, for every router that changes next up, I'm creating those type 5 LSAs mm-hmm. with the forwarding address. And so we just... we basically minimize the amount of flies that we need in order to still get the forwarding pass that you want, but without having like one type 5 LSA per next stop, which changes in per router, which changes in this next stop. So that's the trick. But it's always possible to attract traffic as long as the destination, the cost towards the destination is at least 2.
Mm-hmm.
And so if in your network you have cost 1 somewhere, then the precondition...
Bad luck. Yeah.
It's not bad luck. Well, what you need to do, for instance, is you multiply all the weights by 2. You will not change anything in your forwarding. It will be exactly the same as before. And now you can use fibbing because now we will match the condition. So this is what I was mentioning. So there are like, this is one of the precondition in order to use fibbing. You must, for instance, duplicate your weight by 2. And then you need to configure the support for locally visible lies. And then that's it. You can use our controller for the rest.
Yeah, I'm just thinking whether you actually need weight of 2. Well, external cost of 2.
Well, if you have a cost of 1 to reach a destination, how can I attract you, for instance?
Yeah, because, you create a locally visible lie with a cost of 1.
Yes.
And then the question is, what's the OSPF cost to that? That's
correct.
The tiebreaker.
Which is 1 in this case, right? So
yeah.
That would be 2. So you actually need 2, yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
And now that I think about this, you probably have to use E2 externals when you redistribute external subnets into OSPF. These are the details.
Yes,
yeah.
These are really, I can get the answer for that. I can. So I'm not the only one working on this. And there was like, we have Olivier who actually did the implementation in OSPF. It works in Quagga. It's available publicly, by the way. People can look at it. And then it's very easy to answer the question whether you use E2, E1, or whatever. So,
okay, so let's go to the practical side of things.
Yes.
This is actually working?
This is working, yes. So we tested it on both Cisco and Juniper routers with success. We have like a Quagga-based implementation. So Quagga is just a software router that happens to have an OSPF daemon. And so we use this software router to connect anywhere in the network. And then inject information in the OSPF domain.
Well, Quagga seems to me, I don't know much about the open source daemons, but it seems to me like the worst possible platform.
So the thing, so why...
It doesn't have an API, does it?
But you don't need the API, right? So we use Quagga, think of it as Quagga as a library in a sense. So what we needed is a way to establish an OSPF session with someone, with a router.
Of course.
And then inject type 5 LSA on this and then listen for the RGP topology to come up.
Mm-hmm.
So we use Quagga for that because they happen to have OSPF already implemented.
Yes.
And so we basically leverage the Quagga code, if you want, to get the RGP information, build the graph, and then to inject type 5 LSA inside it. We don't use Quagga for anything else, really.
No, but how do you inject the new LSAs into Quagga?
Yeah, so for that, we had to obviously to orchestrate around. So we have an interface, right? We can say add destination to Quagga, and then Quagga will translate that to a type 5 LSA, and then we inject that on any OSPF session, really. So, but my point is that if you think that Quagga isn't good, we can just take another OSPF daemon, anything. And use that one instead. So Quagga is not fundamental in fibbing.
I totally understand that.
Yeah.
And my question was more along the lines, Quagga is based on text configurations.
Yeah, it's Cisco-like. Yes.
Yeah, and until Cumulus fixed it, you couldn't even reload the Quagga without killing the routing daemon.
Yeah.
So how do you get the type 5 LSAs into the topology database of Quagga so that it's flooded? Did you modify its code or?
We definitely modify the code. Of Quagga.
Okay.
Yes.
That explains it.
Yes. And so basically we have like, it's, you can think of, have this add destination function.
Mm-hmm.
And what the add destination function does is basically even like putting text in the Quagga configuration.
Yeah, so
create the type 5 LSA.
You created an API that allows you to insert type 5 LSAs into Quagga's topology database.
Yes, and we could have done differently, but the nice thing is that it was there already.
Of course.
And it works.
Reuse what's there, of course.
And so with this, we, as I said, we basically, we tested it on Cisco routers, mm-hmm. Juniper routers. There is a, we have a website, by the way, which is fibbing.net, with papers, presentation, and a video of the case studies on the Cisco routers. Mm-hmm. You can really see the actual Cisco routers being fibbed and the traffic like being steered away from the shortest pass. And the cool thing is that we also did measurements on the Cisco routers.
Okay, and?
And the results were pretty good. Mm-hmm. As I mentioned at the beginning of the podcast, like Cisco, they have spent like 25 years optimizing their code.
Mm-hmm.
And we realized it's actually quite fast. So first of all, in terms of like the number of lies a router can sustain, so we pushed up to 100,000 lies in the network.
And you pushed 100,000 LSAs.
Yes, 100,000 LSAs.
Into an OSPF network, correct. Running what boxes?
It was Cisco ASR.
Okay, the high-end boxes.
Yes, correct. The high-end box in this case.
Yeah.
Running iOS XR. And what we realized...
Ah, so it was ASR9K.
ASR9K, correct.
Yeah.
Yes. But the Juniper... So just to come up on this, so... We also tested on Juniper M120 and actually even...
Yeah, the MX router. Yeah.
Yes. And it works. It worked mm-hmm. as well. So it's not... I mean, it's not.
No, it's not like, that I wouldn't trust the high-end platforms.
Of course. But you can do it also on like small-end platform. But what we wanted to see is like...
I was amazed by the number of LSAs that these platforms are willing to accept without crashing.
Yeah, and the thing is that... So they only use 150... meg of extra RAM to handle those 100,000 mm-hmm. LSAs. So we were pretty much amazed by this.
Mm-hmm.
So 100,000 is extremely high.
Yeah, right?
Nobody will even
that's ridiculous.
That. But that's just to show that the router didn't crash, mm-hmm. and 150 meg was actually really tiny compared to the memory of the router.
So, yeah.
So that was pretty easy.
Those platforms use a lot of memory.
Yes.
How did that impact the SPF speed?
Ah, beautiful. It did not impact it at all. And so go back to your SPF knowledge, right? So,
well, it impacts the partial SPF speed.
Yeah, but when you receive a TI 5 LSA, right, you add this to the actual cost that you know to reach a forwarding address that you have computed already.
Yeah, so it's not SPF, it's the distance vector part of
exactly.
OSPF.
You are spot on. Yeah. It's the distance vector part, but it's just doing an addition.
Mm-hmm.
And that's it. So the impact is really minimum. I think we
so it's linear with the number of LSAs. It's not polynomial.
Oh no, definitely yes. Yeah, just for each LSA you have to do one addition.
Yeah,
that's it. But you don't have to rerun a complete extra a computation.
No. Every time you insert a new type 5 LSA with the modern code,
of course
you run partial SPF.
Yes.
Yeah.
So
in the good old code, it would trigger the full SPF run.
Of course. Yes. Yeah, I'm sure it would.
Yeah.
Yes.
I've been there.
Yes. The cool thing as well is that we looked at is, so we were interested in knowing the time it takes to install 1,000 entries in the network. So you can think of this also. Think about this in the context of a SDN controller, for instance.
Mm-hmm.
You have like your SDN controller, open daylight, and you want to program in every single switch in your network, you want to program 1,000 forwarding entries.
Mm-hmm.
So think of the time it would take to do that, right? Knowing that there have been many studies measuring the performance of SDN hardware, and it can take up to 1 second to install one rule when you are pushing thousands of rules in them. Because there is a buffer that creates. And so you can actually reach that
point. Oh, this is way worse than what I've heard. I've heard about 800 flow mods per second.
So there will always be like the super high-end switch that can handle... Like,
no, this was on HP Pro Curve, so it's low end.
But it's not definitely not across the board. So if you are running like even like older switch like OpenFlow 1.0, for instance, mm-hmm. you would never get that kind of performance. But... Now with fibbing, when you think about it, you inject information and then the routers flood.
Mm-hmm.
And then the routers, in a distributed fashion, they compute the forwarding entries. So there is no central computation of the forwarding entries or provisioning of the forwarding mm-hmm. entries. What we provision is the topology that we show to the router. And so what we did is that we injected 1,000 type 5 LSAs
mm-hmm.
and then we measured the time it takes the router to actually program them in mm-hmm. the fib. And so... what we realize is that what we measure is that the average time to install an entry is on the Cisco router is like on this Cisco router is 900 microseconds. So it takes, you can basically program the entire network.
It's 1,000 entries per second.
Exactly. Yeah. But network-wide.
Right? Yeah, 1,000 flow modes per second.
Yes.
Yeah. But network-wide, right?
So I want this to be clear that this is, we really leverage the distributed code for that. And that's also why our life is made much easier, is that Cisco is doing the job for us. So Juniper or whatever, the OSPF code is doing the job for us for the computation of the forwarding entries and the pushing down of the forwarding entries as well.
Well, there is this other thing as well. They had to optimize their code to get the job done. So the code path from OSPF to Polish database to the forwarding hardware is optimized.
Yes.
Whereas everyone just slapped OpenFlow agent on top of their code just to get a tick in the RFPs.
Yes, yes. And so this, I think, is a nice point, right? Because we basically remove the pain point of SPF, which is this configuration, but we keep the nice point, which is the distributed part and the optimized code that is already running, and also the fact that you don't need to buy anything, right? As long as you have like a bunch of switches that even support OSPF, you can do it tomorrow if you want. So we think it's a nice point in the design space. Obviously, there are like trade-offs, as we mentioned, like you cannot match on destination port, this kind of thing. And we only work with OSPF. We don't work with ISAS right now. So for ISAS, the problem is that we don't have this Type 5 very safe warning address. So we're still looking for like a way in ISAS, but we think OSPF is already nice. And what we are thinking now is, so as we discussed before, like we could actually leverage a lot the ability to create routers and not only a Type 5 LSAs. Mm. And so with a few extra modification to OSPF, now we could think of an OSPF++ that could create routers, that could accept new routers. So we are also thinking now of going to the ITF and like trying to basically create an OSPF with fibbing support to also take it to the next level.
But that would create all sorts of security issues.
That would create issues that would have to be discussed probably for years.
Yeah.
And the good thing is that with this Type of 5 LSA trick, you can run it to today. But it would be nicer from a protocol point of view if you can actually create those nodes instead of all these leaves, as you mentioned. Mm-hmm. So that would be nicer.
So if you have an OSPF network and you think about playing with the costs because the traffic just isn't flowing right, and you're willing to do a little bit of extra configuration, now instead of playing with the costs, you could use fibbing.
Yeah, correct.
And I get the code and everything on the website?
Yes. So as I mentioned, like fibbing.net, you have like the papers, presentations, code as well. We are working on the VM that will be released, I hope, very soon. And the idea is to have kind of a mininet-like environment, but with routers. So you can really think of, instead of using OpenFlow to do your SDN tutorial, you could actually use your own network to do that. And you can test this in this VM that we will release. And hopefully we'll have also like a presentation at RIPE, or one is the major operator conference pretty soon as well, describing the technology. And the code is online. You can download it and you can test it, yes.
And when I get stuck, I can do what?
If you get stuck, you can contact the other guys in the team. We have our contacts are online on the webpage. You can contact us. That's, by the way, work done with UC Louvain folks and also Princeton, as we discussed in the first podcast. So it's a collaborative effort. By no means, it's not only me.
Yeah, I know that.
It's a team and... we hope it will
be. Yeah, and you guys have some of the most useful, craziest ideas I've ever seen out there.
I like, of course, that you say that. Yes, thank you. Yes.
So, thank you for this. Thank you for spending the hour with me describing fibbing. It's an interesting thing. I hope someone will pick it up and start playing with it without crashing his network.
No risk.
No risk. You've heard him. If it crashes. Laurent is sitting here in Zurich. Send him an email.
Yes, yes.
And you've been listening to Software Gone Wild, a podcast focused on everything SDN-ish, even if it's as trivial as making OSPF believe that the Earth is actually flat. You want to know more about SDN, go to sdn.ipspace.net, where you'll find all sorts of SDN resources, from webinars to books, presentations, and podcasts like this one. And by the way, if you like this podcast and you haven't subscribed to it yet, go to podcast.ipspace.net, where you'll find the previous episodes and an RSS and iTunes feed that you just put into your podcast application, and you'll get new episodes every now and then. So go out, play with OSPF, enjoy SDN life.